Helen, thank you so much for your time. It's been a long day on the back of a couple of very, very hard months, and there's still lots of work to do. We have heard from Finance Minister Gordon Gwana that the budget has now been tabled for the 21st of May. Perhaps you can talk us through the work that still has to be done in terms of achieving a revised budget that is pro-growth and pro-employment.
Well, there's a lot of work to do. The first thing is that the finance minister was banking on the VAT increase to bring in 75 billion rand, and of course that won't come in now. And being able to do a proper spending review is challenging. It takes quite a while. And we have to look at programs and projects that aren't adding value. We've looked, for example, at the sector education and training authorities, but they're creatures of legislation. And so to undo things like that takes a long time and a lot of due process. So we're going to have to look at where we can trim the fat. And I know that Minister Gordon Gwana is very committed to negotiating this budget. Part of the problem of the last budget was that he was not at all willing to negotiate the budget. His mind seems to have changed on this thing totally, and we have had some good discussions so far as to how to proceed.
There are those calling for the finance minister to resign. Do you think that's extreme?
Well, you know, the most important question in politics is always compared to what? I know that Julius Malema wanted Floyd Shivambu once upon a time to be the finance minister. And one thing that Minister Gordon Gwala does understand is the need for growth and jobs. And that is extraordinarily important in our country because growth doesn't just happen. No one is compelled to invest in South Africa. The conditions have to be right for people to want to invest in South Africa. And Gordon Gwana, Minister Gordon Gwana, understands that as well as anybody in the ANC. And that's a big plus in his favor.
Helen, I've just been listening today, being the 30th of April, to Secretary General of the ANC, Fikile Mbalula, giving a press statement. And in that press statement, he does say that a fundamental error that the DA committed was going to court on this matter. How do you feel about that?
Well, if it wasn't for our court case, you would have had a VAT increase on the 1st of May. It's as simple as that. And let me explain to Fikile Mbalula why. The minister announced that there would be a VAT increase. It was included in the fiscal framework. In the portfolio on the 1st of April, the ANC, along with smaller parties such as RISE, BOSA, Action South Africa, etc., voted the fiscal framework through using a completely incorrect process, but they voted it through. Then it went to Parliament, and Action South Africa, RISE, BOSA, and all the smaller parties, including the IFP and others, helped the ANC to get the fiscal framework through Parliament. Now, once the fiscal framework is through Parliament, which happened on the 2nd of April, only two things can stop the VAT hike going through. One is a court order, which is what we got, which is why there won't be a VAT hike. And the other would have been a new fiscal framework that went through the same process as the old one, which would have been impossible to get through by the 1st of May. So if it wasn't for our court case, there would be a VAT increase on the 1st of May.
Fikile Mbalula's very scathing about the DA. And many are saying that this is a marriage that cannot last, given the lack of respect that the DA has for the ANC and the lack of respect that the ANC has for the DA. Is it a situation of muddling through in terms of remaining the GNU, or do you think that we are headed for an implosion?
Well, we will take it issue by issue. And the only yardstick that we have in the DA is what is best for South Africa. And when we say best for South Africa, we use only one yardstick to measure that, and that is, will it lead to economic growth and more jobs? We've got a terrible problem of poverty in South Africa. And poverty can't be solved by more social grants. It has to be solved by more jobs. And it's not governments that create jobs, it's the private sector. And people with capital and skills can invest anywhere in the world. And we've got to make them want to choose South Africa. And for them to choose South Africa, we have to understand what is stopping them from choosing South Africa and get those obstacles out of the way. Now, we know very well what they are. Unreliable electricity supply was number one. I'm sure it's about to be overtaken by an unreliable water supply. No one is going to invest in a country where you aren't sure of getting electricity 24/7 and where you aren't sure of getting clean water. You can't live in those circumstances. You can't work in those circumstances. And then crucially, they want to know all the other things. I mean, if the ANC government is going to take a third of your business right there before you begin because of some BEE law, you're not going to look at that country. You're not going to look at South Africa. You're going to go somewhere else where no one's going to take away a third of your business. I mean, no one's going to tell you who to hire and who to fire. And no one's going to put all kinds of bureaucratic obstacles in your way. And then, of course, you have the Expropriation Act. Now, if any international investor, and that's what we need more than anything else, was to look at South Africa and then read Section 12 of the Expropriation Act, they would say, no way. I could invest in this country and just now somebody comes and expropriates my entire investment. So we've got to understand, no one is forced to invest in South Africa. They do that if we are a better investment destination than the thousands of other places that are competing for that same investment. And until we get that into our heads, we must understand that social engineering isn't going to work. Governments can't prescribe investment. They can only create conditions for investment to happen.
I wanted to get clarity on this narrative that is pervasive, that the Democratic Alliance would have agreed to a VAT increase if they had achieved certain concessions on NHI, on expropriation without compensation, on potentially additional ministerial posts. Can I get your clarity on this situation?
Well, additional ministerial posts haven't been on the table. The DA is not here after positions and status and perks. That's absolutely never been on the table, nor has the billable. Because we believe that expropriation is such a barrier to investment, we keep on pushing it on the table to say, you know, if you're going to have this and you want to attract investment, you're going to have to think again. Now, we're fighting the Expropriation Act in court. So, you know, and I'm very confident as you can be in this uncertain terrain, that we're going to win. So apart from pushing back the VAT, we're, I believe, going to push back the Expropriation Act. And we've got a very strong case in law and we're going to do that. So there's no need to bargain around that in exchange for concessions on the VAT increase. The critical thing we need is all of the measures that will grow the economy. And those are primarily the network industries. We've got to take away the monopoly that CETA has on the internet access of government. We've got to remove that completely. That's just a feeding trough for ANC cadres because there's a monopoly in the state. We've got to make sure that the railways are working again and working well. We've got to make sure we have devolution of power so that cities can run effective metro police forces with proper powers to do that. We've got to do a whole range of things that create an investment climate. We've got to ensure that, for example, we concession the ports and the railways. And what we said to the ANC at the time was, if you will give us this raft, and it was a big list, of major concessions to achieve economic growth, we said we would be prepared to negotiate around a small VAT increase for 1 year only. But the ANC was absolutely not prepared to meet our conditions. So we said, well, that's fine. Then we'll take you on head on.
Fikile Mbalula, in his press briefing today, said that the DA must ask themselves seriously how they are going to proceed in the government of national unity when they do not agree with the budget. Can you perhaps offer a response to the question he's asked you as the DA?
Yes, sure. I mean, we showed them what we did when we didn't support the budget. We stopped the budget. We stopped the fiscal framework, and that is the basis for the budget. So that's what we did. And now we're in negotiations again to get a budget that we can all support.
The smaller parties within the government of national unity, what do you make of the noise surrounding the budget and the back and forward on who supported that, who didn't support that? Don't you despair in this political game that is unfolding, Helen?
Well, there's a very simple factual test that you can put on it. The VAT increase was in the fiscal framework. Who voted for the fiscal framework? The parties that voted for the fiscal framework supported the VAT increase. It is as simple as that.
Talk to me about 6 months, 12 months out, and South Africa as you see it, with a sturdy government of national unity at the helm.
Well, a week is a long time in politics, as the famous saying goes. So you never know what's going to happen next. This is going to be a very, very unusual coalition. If any of the things that have happened in the past 6 months had happened in any normal European coalition, the government would have fallen instantly. But South Africa is a different kettle of fish. We can take each other head on within the government of national unity and survive. And that's a very interesting feature of South Africa. Every time we have a head-on clash, people would say, well, the government is falling. Not in South Africa. We're a bit more robust and a bit more sturdy than that. Now, that is not to say that there won't become an issue that makes it impossible for us to stay in the GNU. But all our polling tells us that the GNU is enormously popular and very much supported across the board. And for as long as that remains, we will continue fighting and standing up for our voters and remain in the GNU until it becomes impossible for us to stand up for our voters in the GNU. So we will stand up for our voters. But we can only do that because we have enough support and enough votes to hold the balance of power. So that means we can bring the government down if we withdraw. The smaller parties are all there by grace and favor of the ANC. Cyril could fire them tomorrow and it would make no difference at all. That explains why they are so quick to please the ANC, where we don't have to. We are there because of the voters, not by grace and favor of an appointment by the president.
I want to pursue that point where if you were to withdraw, the government would fall. Dr. Franz Cornier, political scientist, who's a regular on Biz News, spoke of the trigger for a vote of no confidence in Cyril if it came to that point. Is that the end game if you were to exit? Would it be a vote of no confidence as the trigger?
Well, the ANC has got a tremendous succession problem. It's been a party that has been unable to attract a lot of talent because they've been unwilling to do so. They are a gatekeeping party. They keep out talent. The DA, on the other hand, consciously searches for talent. We go out and look for the best people available. And that is why you see so many young people, outstanding young people, coming up through our ranks. So the question is, if Cyril goes, then who? And I can tell you that Paul Mashatile, if he succeeds Cyril, will not want the DA in the GNU, and he will work as a first order of business to get rid of us in the GNU. So it is highly likely that if Cyril Ramaphosa were to be removed, and if Paul Mashatile were to succeed him, the government of national unity as we know it would end.
Helen, talk to me about the personal toll that this has taken on you. I mean, the fight has been hard. It's just started, potentially.
This has been very easy, Bronwyn. I mean, I don't want to sound blasé, but, you know, I've only got one job now, and you don't know what a difference that makes. I mean, when I was mayor, I was the mother of two challenging adolescent sons, and they were challenging. I was the mayor and running a 7-party coalition, and I was the leader of the party. Now, that was challenging. And I'd often work right through the night to get my stuff done. It was easier being the premier and the leader than being the mayor, A, because we had an overall majority, so I wasn't dealing with the huge complexity of running a coalition. But when I became the chair of the Federal Council of the DA, that's just one job. And the DA has tremendous capacity. I cannot tell you what wonderful support I have in the DA's federal head office. So literally, I get enough sleep now, which I've never done before, and it's an absolute blessing. I mean, I don't know where the sleep comes from. And I run an 8-hour day, sometimes 9, maybe even 10 at a push, but it's totally manageable.
There are a lot of people out there saying, Helen for president. How do you respond to them?
No. I'm here to make sure the DA succeeds. If the DA fails, South Africa fails. It's as simple as that. I know I'm obviously not objective about the DA, but the only reason that I've put my whole life into the DA is because I know it's the difference between success or failure for South Africa. And I see my job in South Africa's history as to put the DA into the best possible position to take the next step. I'm sure we'll have a DA president in the not-too-distant future. It won't be me, but I hope that I will have paved the way for that to happen.
I was listening to you at BizNews 7, the conference, in your introductory remarks and commenting on Alec Hogg, the founder of BizNews, having held his position as a journalist, created numerous platforms in the journalism genre, and you had made that change, right, from journalism into politics. I've been dying to ask you this, and I suppose it's because I am a journalist, but would you have made the same choice now, knowing what you know?
Yes, definitely. I would always have made the same choice. It's not always easy, but no job is always easy, and there have been ups and downs, and all jobs have their ups and downs, but nothing could have compared with what I've done for exhilaration and challenge, and I really enjoy that.
It's been such a pleasure chatting to you. Helen, thank you very much for your time. Again, I know it's been a long day, and I'm sure we'll engage again as we head towards the 21st of May and the politicking begins all over. So Helen Ziller is chair of the DA Federal Council, joining us here on BizNews.